The Earl Ingram Show is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Devil Radio. Enjoy.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up? This
is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Stop right on.
All right, good evening and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And how you doing, Evan?
Doing well, man. Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited, Earl.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime we can bring Sandy.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a great time, but... You know, especially today. How you doing, Sandy?
Well, hi, I'm doing all right. It's winter has set in. I'm watching the river outside my house freeze, but that's all part of the forward progress.
Part of the
right
deal.
Into winter.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and we ought to be used to it by now, huh?
I guess. You know, I think one of the things we're going to talk about is forward progress, or are we stuck in the past? If we're going to get stuck in the past, we could at least get stuck in like October or September or something. It's a really nice month.
Yeah, wishful thinking. But let's start, Sandy, by 70 years ago. Today, you know, as a kid, I remember that was one of the things that we were taught. And you talk about history in school and even as kids, they clearly taught us about World War II and what took place in Pearl Harbor and, you know.
Well, yeah, but you know what? I remember even more starkly than that is the duck and cover drills. And I don't know how many people today on the radio are familiar with the duck and cover. But in the 1950s. In the early 1950s and all the way through, but, you know, from the time I was in second grade on, we would have civil defense sirens that would go off. And then we would all have to assume the defense posture that civil defense would require us to take if we were having a nuclear attack from Russia. And we would have movies in class about the potential attack from the Soviet Union that would come through the air through bombers first and then missiles was the next theory. And Milwaukee was one of the targets because we had the AC Delco guidance system factory, which was right on Kenilworth, right where UWM now has a building. And we were all supposed to, I think we would, initially we went in the cloak hall and would put coats over ourselves to protect ourselves from flying glass. Then we'd get under the desk so we wouldn't get hit by falling objects. And we were all, however, when I calculated it in about fifth grade, I figured out that we were all in the zone where we would all get vaporized. And so it was hard to figure out but it was instilled in us at a very early age that the United States was kind of quaking in fear because there was this potentially dire attack that would come from abroad. It would come from Russia. It would come out of the blue for no reason at all, that Russia would just attack us. And
you know, go ahead.
And that we would never be the initiating force behind an attack, when what was going on the other side of the Atlantic in Russia was just the opposite sort of fear that America had all these nuclear weapons, that we had used them at the end of World War II, and that we had a great fear of communism and what it would do, and that they and Russia had to be terribly fearful about whether we would attack them on a preemptory basis and remove the threat of communism from the world. And so both sides were sitting, waiting with their finger on the button because they were suspicious that the other side would attack first.
You know, Sandy, I too grew up with those fears. We had those threats and putting our heads underneath the desk as if that somehow was going to prevent nuclear holocaust. But you know, 70 years ago, you know, what took place in Pearl Harbor, and that history and all of those things that we took with us through our young lives and the fears that we live with, Sandy, why are we still living with those fears today?
Well, that's where I was going to go with this, because it turns out that when in 1989 and 90 with Perestroika and the collapse of the Soviet Union, and we got to actually look into the innards of the Soviet Union and see what it was and what it had been, you know, Stalin, Joseph Stalin, was a scary kind of a boogeyman who was doing terrible things to Russians, much less to the rest of the world. So I suppose it was credible to us and to the world that Joseph Stalin could do something heinous. But Stalin died in 53. And the Russia after that was really struggling to make things go reasonably well within the Soviet Union. The notion that they had the logistical wherewithal to conduct a war, attack us, or they had any motivation to do so, was just, turns out, when you look at it in the window from 1990, a totally unlikely circumstance. And when the historians look back at the Cold War, they realize that it was a mutual paranoia, that neither side was going to attack the other, that our paranoia about Russia was just that, paranoia, ill-founded fears. And the problem is that cold warriors like Joe Biden and others grew up the same way we did, with all these embedded truths embedded in our heart about the potential dire threat that was posed by these enemies. And we also grew up with a fundamental belief that America needed to be dominant in the world, everywhere in the world, so that we could exert our force for, and I use quote marks, good. The good that America defined for the rest of the world, which, you know, after Vietnam, we realized maybe that wasn't always that good. And maybe after the Mideast, 20 years in Afghanistan, we realized it wasn't always possible to assert that capacity to extend good, and Vietnam as well. So the world is different than we thought it was, but I fear that the drums beating today are an echo, and they're an echo from 1960 rather than an echo from 1998 or 2000.
Sandy, you and I and others know that the world has changed, and America's place in that world is no longer the same as it was, you know, 70 years ago. And yet we continue to act as though our place in the world is the same. It's not. It's never going to be that again. And the sooner, and it doesn't matter how much we continue to invest our resources and mislead other Americans to believe that, you know, we still have that same place in the world. That's not going to change anything, Sandy. The sooner the American people find out the truth, maybe the better and safer it is for all of us.
Well, I think that the truth is that we don't need to be dominant in order to be the most successful country on earth in terms of the welfare of our citizenry and the standard of living to which we attain. But if we continue to believe that we have to be the dominant, and by dominant, I mean militarily dominant and controlling in the world of international trade, the longer we believe that's necessary, the less likely it is that we will be able to sustain this great standard of living and the level of national success that we would want for our citizenry, because it causes us to bleed ourselves almost to death with military expenditures. And the lesson that the Soviet Union showed us was that they sort of bled themselves to death with military expenditures. They didn't have anything like the basic economy we did, but they devoted a far too high percentage of their GDP to the military and to the detriment of the social order in the Soviet Union. And so I'm just fearful that we have people making decisions now that believe that somehow we have to be dominant, or that we are dominant. And our ability to, for instance, draw a red line with the Soviet Union over Ukraine now, and to tell them that we will, for instance, shut down the SWIFT dollar, the transfer of money, international money from banks into Russia, or that we will essentially turn off their gas pipeline, which is the main provider of natural gas to the country of Germany, requires a cooperation from all the other countries in the world that I'm just not sure we can count on.
But wouldn't Russia look at that as an act of war?
Well, sure. I mean, Japan, you know, the truth is when people investigated the background to Pearl Harbor, a primary cause of Pearl Harbor was that we embargoed oil for the Japanese empire in the Pacific. And so we essentially were squeezing them dry with respect to oil. And oil was at that point the fundamental resource for their economy in terms of the fuel. And so, you know, as far as they were concerned, that was an act of war, and they answered it with their act of war. And so, you know, when you corner a dog, the dog bites. And so, a dog that might not otherwise bite will bite if they're cornered and feel endangered. So, you know, that's the problem with swashbuckling foreign affairs, where you take an opponent and corner them. It's clear that the part of the Chinese reaction in the South China Sea and part of the bellicose conduct of China right now in terms of building up their navy and talking about having an Atlantic port for their navy that just came up last week as a supposed surprise to us. You know, we have ports in the Pacific and the Atlantic, but apparently China is not entitled to do that. That's because we turned the screws on them financially. We put on tariffs, and we tried to corner them financially. And so they said, "Well, okay, we've got leverage."
You know, Sandy, it once again, we're looking at the threats that apparently Putin with the buildup at the border with Ukraine. The United States is kind of forcing the issue because they want Ukraine to join NATO. And Russia is saying, no, we're not going to be next door to us and be a part of a threat to our nation. Who's right and who's wrong here?
Well, you know, you have to look at this, and it even comes down to smaller pieces than that. The Crimea is a very important seaport in the Black Sea. And the seaport in the Black Sea is important to commerce to the whole south central part of the old Soviet Union and Russia now. And so it was important that so Crimea is strategically important to Russia. And when we in the 90s began to flirt with the notion of letting the Ukraine actually join NATO, even though George Bush the first had said at the time of Perestroika that we would not threaten Russia by doing such things as expanding NATO to their doorstep. That caused them, I think, to take a more active and more bellicose position about the Crimea and to essentially annex it so that they could avoid the risk of losing the important Crimean location with what was going on in the Ukraine. And so, you know, it's smaller pieces like that. It's not just a country flexing its might. It's a bit like the United States being very upset about Cuba back in the day when there was going to be a Soviet base built in Cuba. And that was quite an alarming fact to us.
So, Sandy, hang on a second. Hold that thought. We've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. My good friend Sandy Williams is back, and we're glad he's here. We'll be right back.